Welcome back to Shattering Mystery. We're listening to 2 points that Glenn was making about the propensity of talk radio show hosts. One was to describe a man-made apocalypse that we need to, our listeners need to prepare for, and that's not going to happen. There's not going to be a man-made apocalypse that one can prepare for, because by the time that man actually perpetrates his apocalypse on humankind, Yahweh will return, and the only preparation for that will be to be part of the covenant. But what was the second point that you were making that you say a lot of radio show hosts are talking about?
Yeah, the two, you know, ridiculous extremes unavailable to sinful fallen man. One is the utter extinction level event type apocalypse, you know, and the other extreme is somehow man pulling himself up by his own bootstraps to create some, you know, wonderful new age of going to the stars, a human actualization, and, you know, some sort of paradisical, you know, circumstances on Earth if we can all bury the hatchet and make everything work. That, you know, so I can hear, like, on one hand, I can hear Dr. Deagle, the self-proclaimed prophet, talking about, you know, extinction-level events. On the other hand, I can hear Alex Jones talking about some going to the stars. He likes the, you know, human actualization, going to the stars thing. And this is just ridiculous, you know. Yeah, maybe we'll go, maybe, you know, Yahweh's, you know, redeemed creation after, you know, all of this might do some going to the stars, but certainly not sinful fallen man in his present state.
Correct.
You know, this is all utter foolishness.
Right, yeah. Humankind as a material being can never go to the stars.
Precisely.
And could, I mean, we could launch a spacecraft whose destination was the sun, and the gravity of the sun would pull us into a star, but that would not be a highly desirable scenario. I mean, by the time you started approaching the sun, you'd be dead.
Entering in space.
Yes,
yeah.
but that's the only star that physical man can reach. There it is. You know, the Interstellar presented the Star Trek myth, which is the wormhole and warping time via a wormhole. And it's always interesting that the way they try to project this is they take a two-dimensional object, a piece of paper. Now, it's a piece of paper, actually, three dimensions because it has a thickness, but they pretend as if it's a two-dimensional construct. And they put a dot two places on a piece of paper and say, you know, that's just too far to, and takes too long to get from here to here if you go on a straight line.
But if we fold
so what
the
you
paper,
do, so they fold the paper, which is now being deployed as a two-dimensional construct, so that the two points touch one another on the folded paper. But space is not a two-dimensional construct. It cannot be folded in this way. And there are no, you know, in that movie, the whole calculus was to understand and be able to control gravity. We don't even know what gravity is. I mean, literally. The humankind has no concept whatsoever what gravity is. And then they said, you know, the problem is they couldn't reconcile the relativity model with the quantum mechanics. Well, of course they can't. They are opposites. They're, you know, one seeks to approximate, the other seeks to explain. One is based upon the myth that there is such thing as gravity as a force, and that it's compelled by a graviton, which they don't explain. And the other says that gravity isn't a force, it's simply an effect.
It wasn't that long ago they couldn't even figure out why anything held together, because they knew about centrifugal force, but the idea of the centripetal force that holds things together, all that was, you know, myth. Yahweh has created the earth for us to dwell on. You know, we were created, our bodies are created to dwell here. You know as well as I do, just to go underwater to the meager depth of 80 to 140 feet, you can only stay down just so long, and that's just in a little bit of the water. To go down deeper, you need to. So humans, we cannot leave the environment created for us by God for any length of time, you know.
For any length of time and live. That is correct. I mean, to say that, okay, you know, they're orbiting in a space station and suddenly stay up there for a year, okay. And if they don't come down, they die. And you know, if you, yeah, we've sent men to the moon. But, you know, if they don't come back, they're going to die up there. We're never going to have a colony up there, you know. The Earth is as far afield as we're ever going to get. And it's really just the Earth, terra firma. It's not under the water. It's not in the atmosphere. We aren't going to colonize another planet or moon in our solar system. We're not going to get there. We couldn't survive there if we got there. And we're not leaving our solar system. I mean, that's just all there is to it. It's a simple matter of physics that the distances are too great, even at the speed of light, for us to get there, and we can't even approach the speed of light, because as matter, it takes an infinite amount of energy to accelerate a physical object to the speed of light, and when you, if you could do so, if you had an infinite amount of energy, and we don't, then that piece, that matter, that speck of matter, enlarges so that it would encompass the whole universe. So it would be counterproductive. It can't be done.
Even for those who are familiar with the Star Trek Voyager series, a Starfleet ship captained by Captain Janeway, a woman captain, gets flipped into a different quadrant of the Milky Way galaxy. The galaxy is divided. It's just to get from one quadrant of a galaxy to back to the home quadrant, traveling at multiples of the speed of light, takes them decades or whatever. You know, so this
right.
and the intergalactic travel is positive, is even exponentially more foolish.
Yeah,
you know?
We're not leaving our solar system ever,
yeah.
much less leaving our galaxy. And it's a physical impossibility, not going to happen. It's the stuff of myth. And now, if you were to say that he was speaking, that Alex is speaking symbolically of
no,
a man, if he is, but the fact is that the more powerful, the more enlightened man becomes, the more degenerate man becomes,
exactly.
The more deadly man becomes. You know, when we try to succeed on our own, and we develop common institutions and congregate in common institutions, we become worse.
Right. Without matzah, you know,
right.
we're walking around in our sinful, fallen state. We, you know, don't always do the right thing.
Well, there is one thing worse than individual human behavior. Collective human behavior.
Right. It's synergistic. It's, you know, and synergistic evil, and that's what we do. And Yahweh will remedy that and redeem his remnant, you know, according to the planet. And he's spoken. This is the thing people so talk about this stuff. You know, supposed to know these things. They claim to, you know, be believers of, you know, in that Yahweh's prophets are inspired. They don't read them. They don't articulate them. They don't study, and they produce all this gibberish. When Yahweh had spoken and said what he is going to do.
Well, beyond that,
what he's going to do.
even if you did not want to consider what he said he's going to do, he has provided us with history, past, present, and future. And thus far, every declaration he has made about history, past, present, and future, has been accurate. And so he has outlined future history. Now, that doesn't mean that he's ordained our bad behavior. It simply means that...
He's really foreknown it.
Yes. He has seen what we have done to ourselves, and he has reported in our past what we do to ourselves in the future. And that's the nature of light. It was one of the advantages of seeing the movie Interstellar, is they made a decent presentation on the concept of relativity. They did not, however, explain the nature of light and how, as a being of energy, the past, the present, and the future are all the same. Yahweh has witnessed our future and relayed our future to us in our past, so that if you care, as you say, to know what's going to happen, he's told us.
And this isn't to say that really bad things can't happen or that there's some good things can happen. I mean, yes, I mean, I lived through a 17-hour power outage a few years ago. It wasn't a lot of fun, and even with a generator, it wasn't a lot of fun. And that's not to say that bad things can't happen. You know, we've storms, wars, plagues, right. You know, famines, right. Pestilences, right. These things can happen. But they are not extinction-level events relative to the whole world of the Earth and the humanity.
Correct. Correct. I mean, we're going to have more famine. We're going to have more pestilence. There's going to be more widespread catastrophic disease. Storms are going to get worse. Earthquakes are going to get worse. The sun's rays are going to become more of a problem. It could be through pole reversal, could be for any number of reasons, but there are a lot of things that are going to go bad over the next 12 years and then over the next 19 years. A lot of things are going to go south. But there is nothing that humankind can do to mitigate those problems. As a matter of fact, humankind is going to make them worse.
And even if things were wonderful, Yahweh has said it is, you know, appointed unto all men once to die, and then the judgment. But the Yahshua said, all flesh is as the grass. Even if I live through 100 with a wonderful life and everything,
right.
I still, at some point, am going to, this body is going to perish. So the goal is to be in eternal life covenant with Yahweh, and then the problem solved.
Problem solved. You don't have to worry about all of the calamity that's coming because you're not going to be part of it. You know, you may be part of the degradation over the next 12 years, but the degradation over the next 12 years, as bad as it may be, is child's play compared to what's going to happen in the 7 years that follow. And by the way, that's how we get to 2026. I don't think we ever fully explain that. If you take the 7 years of tribulation, which is described in many places, including in Daniel, from the his return in 2033, you end up with the fall of 2026, which is the beginning of the tribulation, which has to coincide with the prophecies in Yeshayah 17 and 18 that we've been discussing, that besmirch America, give a warning to America, and then describe how events in Syria and Damascus ultimately lead to forcing Israel to give up the West Bank, narrowing Israel at the waist, and then that provides the impetus for the Magog, all-Islamic war against Israel, of which Muslims flood into Israel faster than there are bullets to stop them, and that Yahweh himself intervenes in the midst of that process, and that in that process, before the war and after the thinning, is the harvest when the covenant's children will be removed from this calamity. We'll be back. Come back to Shattering Mess. We still have Glenn on the line. Glenn, the stunt raised an interesting question about travel. And his statement was, you know, what if Yahweh moves faster than the speed of light? And we know the speed of light was 186,000 miles per second. Now, at the speed of light in the existing universe, which is approximately 15 billion years in radius, its diameter from one side to the other would therefore be, if you're at one extreme, you want to go to the other extreme, would be would take you 30 billion years if you were moving at the speed of light. But what I expressed to Scott during the break, and please chime in on this if you'd like, that if you're light moving at the speed of light, the denominator is zero. And, you know, it's 186,000 miles per second. Let's just round numbers, 200,000 miles per second. Well, since the denominator, time doesn't flow if you're on the speed of light. On a beam of light, if you are actually energy, time doesn't move. The denominator is essentially zero. So if you were to take, for example, 200 million miles per second, and you were to divide that by, you know, say it's only one-tenth of a second that you were able to do that, you'd multiply the distance by 10. But if it's a hundredth of a second, you'd multiply the distance by 100.
Yeah, well, obviously, denominators of zero produce infinite results. So,
that is correct.
The problem is this conversation is all happening in the context of Newtonian physics, which obviously it reminds me of a joke by the comedian Stephen Wright, who once said, if you were traveling in your car at the speed of light, and you turned on your headlights, would they do anything?
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's the same kind of, yeah.
Actually, while we think, and from a perspective of Newtonian physics, we're actually having this conversation from the perspective of relativity. We're having the discussion based upon Einstein, not Newton.
Right.
And according to what Einstein has surmised, and it's been proven to be true, time does not flow on a photon of light. Time slows to the point where it no longer moves. And therefore, the denominator in the equation of speed, which is distance over time, the denominator becomes zero, making the speed infinite.
Right, so when you do quantum physics, you know, then you end up with all these curves that approach infinity or curves that approach zero and masses that approach infinity.
I'll tell you one better.
My conception of Yahweh is that he is pure consciousness. He is the I am. And and that the Ruach Kodesh is his manifestation in energy, is you know, set apart. Manifestation is energy, and the Yahusha is his set apart manifestation as matter. Okay, now I would suggest that he has created dimensionality as a framework within which all the rest of the creation exists, and he himself is transcendent of the dimensionality he has created. And since that we can't comprehend it, so there comes a point at which you just let the curves approach whatever they're going to approach, and realize that Yahweh is. He is the I am, and he is beyond, he is transcendent of these limitations because he is the one who created them.
Yeah, so I think you're right in that he can interact with his creation. He can engage with his creation. He can enter his creation, but he is transcendent of it. If he's not transcendent of it, then he cannot be the creator. You can't be the creator of that which you are, you know?
If he were trapped within the cage of dimensionality, then he is no God.
That's correct.
I
would agree with you. The one place where I would put some constraints on your statement, and it's only a constraint from the perspective of having some understanding of what consciousness is that Yahweh identified, he says, you know, if you want to know what I'm like and what you're going to be like, the closest thing to what I am and what you're going to be is light. And so when we discuss light, we get to the closest approximation of who he is and what we're going to be like, recognizing that that is still but a shadow of the ultimate nature. But I would agree with you. I think that all of that is absolutely true. I do think that the four-dimensional construct that we're able to discuss in terms of the three-dimensional universe existing within the dimension of time is with its black energy and dark matter is probably actually seven dimensions, and I agree that Yao is transcendent of it and yet engages in it through the mechanisms that you've described. I don't have any debate with any of that. Welcome back to Shattering This. Well, I think that Glenn's depiction of Yao is reasonable. And it's also true that Yahweh did identify one aspect of creation to say this is most like who he is and what he is offering to do for us, which is to be light and to be made like light.
Absolutely.
His name, his purpose, and his nature is revealed in his word. So, you know, he's just as consciousness develops relationships with other consciousness, so soul to soul, if you will, through words. Yahweh is known through his words. So you can get a very clear understanding of who he is, what he's like, and what he's offering through his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Glenn, we have Bob on the line here who has a comment on God. And, Glenn, you're locked in, so you'll be able to respond to him as well. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Something I heard in a sermon many, many years ago that I've never forgotten. You know, we tend to think of ourselves as being real and solid in this physical world, and we think of the spirit world or the world of angels and God as kind of a wispy, nebulous, kind of smoke kind of a thing, and that this world here is real. Well, you know, we know that God is eternal, and yet we are physical. We are definitely not eternal.
Yeah, mortal.
We're mortal. So the point the minister was making was that if we qualify and become part of God's family and his assume his nature, we're going to look back at this world as being rather wispy and nebulous and nothing, and that existing as a spirit being, that's going to be the real, that's going to be solid.
I don't think he's right. I'm going to challenge this. Let me listen to my explanation, Bob, and you're more than welcome to disagree with it as well, Glenn, you are as well. Actually, I don't think that that the physical world, which is a degraded version of the energy world. So if we use light and matter, for example, matter and light, energy and matter are actually the same things. That's one of the things that Einstein proved. They are the same. The only difference is the amount of energy, the amount of them. It takes enormously more matter to equal energy. That's why it's E equals MC squared. It's matter equals energy, but with matter multiplied by the speed of light times the speed of light. So I think that actually energy and matter are the same thing. It's just that matter is degraded and organized energy. And that I think that when we enter the realm of spirit, where we are more akin to light than we are to matter, I think that we, like Yosha, are going to be able to choose times when we wish to be matter again. There are advantages of being matter, of being having a physical form. And the advantages are you can eat. You can actually talk audibly. You can feel. There are things that are celebratory and discovery oriented, where, for example, you may want to stop and enjoy a moment in time. Well, you've got to be physical to enjoy a moment in time, otherwise time simply exists. And so I do think we're just like energy can be transitioned into matter and matter can be transitioned into energy. I think in the eternity with Yahweh as part of his covenant family, that we're going to find the material world interesting. I think he's going to create a new universe for us to explore. I think we're going to find it really quite interesting.
Yeah, the scriptures speak of a new heaven and a new earth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, that's the degree of pollution and destruction on the planet, which is happening nowadays. It's going to have to be recreated. I mean, look at the radiation from Fukushima. How are we going to get rid of that?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right in terms of it's polluted, but I'm going to tell you that the principal pollution that Yahweh is going to rid the planet of is not the nuclear pollution, and it's not the garbage. It's not chemicals. The principal pollution that he's going to get rid of is religion and politics. And those are the two pollutions that are going to be eradicated immediately. But, you know, I think that the biggest reason that he has to create a new heaven and earth, because he is going to restore the existing earth to the conditions of Garden of Eden when he returns in Yom Kippurim. So this earth is going to be returned to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, which is a pretty good cleansing. But ultimately, we have a pollution legacy associated with this planet that has to be resolved when we are freed from the constraints of time. And that's our past. And that's why I think that Yahweh is going to create a new universe, one without a hurtful past.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What do you think, Glenn?
You talk about religion and politics. Those are human group behaviors, and the synergy of human sin. It's the mm-hmm. fungus of sin that God is going to solve. Right. That's going to make those problems ultimately go away. It's no problem for him to fix Fukushima, radiation, right. You name it. He can renew. Now, I would want to point out that Yahusha said, there's a reason Yahusha said, it's better for you that I go away. I'll send you another Paracletos, the comforter, because the Ruach Kodesh is less limited. Jesus, Yahusha, in his physical form, had limitations that the Ruach Kodesh does not have as an energetic manifestation of Yahweh. And so that's a good thing. Now, also, you point out Yahusha's body was burned as the Passover lamb, and when he manifested on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him, yet he manifested in a physical form. You know, down in Thomas, place your hand in my side, you know, all that sort of thing. He did not, I don't want to wax Gnostic and become too antimatter, you know. Yahweh created the material world. We hear this, the concept of the glorified body, you know.
Right, and he likes it. He likes it. I like it. You like it. We get to it. Can you imagine an eternity without something in the physical world to explore?
Right. Of course, it begs the question of what the sewage treatment facilities are like in heaven. But, all those questions.
Muhammad told us there'll be no defecation, no feces in heaven, so we ought not worry about that.
I would suffer all this dissipate,
everything you just said, I happen to agree with. I do think that there will be a great celebration of the physical, as there will be the spiritual, and we will transition between the two of them when we're with Yahweh, just as Yahusha did during the celebration of Bukurim. He transitioned back and forth between being spiritual and being physical on that day. By the way, you know, there's another thing that you mentioned that I want to just explain. When Yahusha tells us that it is better for us to have the set-apart spirit than it is for him to be transitioning back and forth in their presence, the reason is, again, that the spirit, as an energy-based existence,
manifestation
of Yahweh, it has to be, by definition, by the speed of light times the speed of light, more energetic, more powerful, more capable than any physical manifestation. He was describing relativity.
Our attempts to, most of us not being schooled in physics or having had some high school physics or college physics, our grasp of this stuff is exceedingly limited. And I don't necessarily agree with the premise that matter and energy are the same thing. I've never found anyone who asserts that who could stand in front of a city bus and just pass through it, right? Like in the paint.
But they really are. I mean, energy and when you have an atomic bomb, you're converting energy or matter into energy, and when you have a hydrogen bomb, which is a fusion bomb, you're converting energy into matter. We can go both ways. We have demonstrated that you can go both ways, that these things are equivalent. You know, it's interesting that even in matter, like I just put my hand, an open hand, against the desk that I'm sitting at here. And, you know, I don't go through it. You're right. Just like standing in front of the city bus. I did not go through it. But, you know, my hand, there's vastly more space in my hand than there are particles. And
the same thing is true with the desk.
That is correct. We can't get the spaces to align in such a way. Plus, there's fields around these things. And there's a repulsive nature around these things as well. And so, You're right. We don't yet have the mechanism for making all that work. But yet, as energy, Yahusha was able to go through the physical wall of the upper room.
But we cannot.
No, we cannot. But
so
you know, there are. There are things in our universe that can, you know, like when they try to find neutrinos now, they look for them in caverns that are in quarks that are deep underground is the only place that they can. Yeah, that's where they look for them, so that they are, in fact, passing through what we consider to be physical matter, because they are so tiny, they actually do slip between the cracks. You know, one of the reasons we can't travel in space is because of the radiation that's given off by the sun. That radiation will pass right through the ship's metallic cocoon, if you will, and pass right through our bodies. When it passes through our bodies, the energy actually damages our cells.
That's one of the cancer theories, right?
Right. So, it's a part of our existing universe that can literally pass through matter. So, there are things that can do it. We just aren't among them.
Right, exactly. So I accept my physical limitations for the moment, since I'm feeling them every day in my middle-aged life.
Yep. And, Bob, I think that your understanding is absolutely accurate. I am not as fond of your pastor's explanation. I think his explanation was Gnostic in its origins. But yours, I concur with. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. One of the things we want to be careful of, and Glenn, you did bring this up, Bob has gone here, is that Pauline Christianity was sold to the world, particularly to the Greeks, based upon Gnosticism. It was sold to the Romans based on its anti-Semitism. It was sold to the Greeks based on Gnosticism. All of Paul's diatribe of the spirit and the flesh, and the flesh being bad, the spirit being good, he associates the Torah and circumcision with the flesh. He attributes his doctrine with the spirit, and that's good. All of that is Gnostic. And from a Gnostic Greek philosophical and religious perspective, the physical world is bad, it's flawed. And the spiritual world is that which is perfect and to be praised and the like. And Gnosticism is wrong. God rather likes the physical world. He created the physical world. He's pleased with the physical world. He created this physical world for us to enjoy and for him to enjoy.
Now, and I'm keenly aware of this. And the distinction between a valid, you know, understanding of Yahweh's creation versus Gnosticism, one of the problems for us is that we have the second law of thermodynamics in play, which is the law of entropy that says that systems in order tend toward disorder. And so this is why we have to clean things and reorganize things and repair things, okay? When our bodies age, looking back, life was much more pleasant when I woke up the hormonal levels of a 22-year-old versus a 53-year-old, and ready to hop out of bed and go versus saying, put it in gear and force yourself, you know. So as our bodies age and we get aches and pains and illnesses and injuries, it's easy to see why we would feel dislike these aspects of the material world.
Everything degrades. You even look at stars, the great source of light, the furnaces of the universe. They degrade, and they ultimately degrade to the point that they die and they explode. Everything degrades over time, and it's one of the reasons why macroevolution as a theory doesn't work.
Exactly.
Things degrade. They don't get refined. They don't improve. They don't stay in working order and improve without an outside source of direction or energy or competence. And in the case of this universe, and our planet, it is degrading. Our bodies are degrading. The human genome is degrading. We need a reboot.
And who has ordained this? Yahweh himself.
Right.
And the material world is not inherently bad, but this limitation has been imposed upon it. And what is it that works against entropy? Biological life. Yahweh is the, inanimate object, universe has a form, but it's constantly changing, and that you have disorder, and then sometimes order will emerge and new things form. Mm-hmm. But biological life is inherently ordered, and Yahweh created that order as well. So all of these problems associated with all this are changed in the glorified state.
Right.
Changed, but Yahweh himself has redeemed.
You know, one of the things that's interesting, I want to conclude with this, is that you described Yahweh as pure consciousness. And what is the part of us that Yahweh wants us to focus on that can transcend our mortality?
The Nesama.
Our souls, right? And what is our soul? It is our consciousness,
right? Consciousness, right, exactly.
Right. So it is our consciousness, our soul, that transcends this this ordinary mortal existence to be with the ultimate source of consciousness. It makes sense that our unique persona is a conscience, is consciousness, I should say, since that is what Yahweh is, and that we ultimately become like Him. So that our consciousness is enhanced.
Right. It conforms to his view.
Yeah, it's a marvelous affirmation of your sweeping understanding of who Yahweh is and how He relates to and transcends and yet created and yet intervenes in this universe. We'll be with you tomorrow.